Good morning. And welcome to our Personal Theology Speaker Series, which I think most of you here know has been going for about 36 years now. Our speaker this morning is Dr. Pat LeDuceur. Is that right? LeDuceur, who's going to show us how we can be stress-free and on top of things during the holidays. And I think I need this more than anybody today, because last week the ice maker on our refrigerator busted and flooded our kitchen floor. And so for the next few weeks, we're going to be dealing with repairs on that. So it seems like these things always happen around the holidays, these stressful things. So for the past 30 years, Pat has been helping smart, creative people live with less stress and more joy in their lives. She has a private practice in Albany, and her fusion of science and practical wisdom helps her clients feel more focused, more connected, and more productive. Pat has a master's degree in clinical psychology, a PhD in sociology, and she's board certified in neurofeedback and also hypnotherapy. She's author of a book called Small Change, Big Results. And if you like what you hear today and would like to learn more, we have her book over here in the corner, as usual, for sale after the presentation. So let's give a warm welcome and a thank you to Pat LeDuceur.
So imagine that you're walking up a hill on a beautiful fall afternoon, maybe today, but the path that you're on is rocky and there are pockets of mud and there are tree branches across it, so it takes a lot of effort to make any progress. Now what if I told you that there was another path just a few steps away, but this path was clear and well packed, so the hike is much easier, and either way you get to the top of the hill. Would you rather take the rocky path with the branches, or would you rather take the easier, cleared path? If you're like most people, you'd probably take the easier path. But when it comes to responding to life's challenges, most of us take the harder path. We don't do it on purpose, but we do it nevertheless. And what I mean by the harder path is your to-do list is a mile long. If you have an inbox, it's overflowing. There are more people that want your time and energy than you have. That by the end of the day, you're exhausted, and when it's time to finally sleep, your head's spinning. So that's the path of stress. And you may know this, but 3 out of every 4 people in this country have enough symptoms, enough stress to create physical symptoms. So how many of you in the past year have had one of these 5 top symptoms of stress? So headache, stomach ache, backache, difficulty sleeping, or just a lot of worry? Yeah, right. And these are only 5 of them. There are dozens of symptoms of stress. And 4 out of 5 medical visits are said to be stress-related as well. So stress can affect every part of your life, right? It can make you feel boxed in, and it can make the difference between having a relaxing conversation with your partner and kicking back on the sofa, or having an argument. Have you ever had the fantasy of just leaving in October and coming back in January when everything's settled back down again? So it's fantasies like that, or like, you know, leaving the state and quitting your job, and if you're working, or just like finding a whole new group of people to hang out with. Those are pretty common when things get intense. But then you start to think, I don't have the money to go off to Tahiti for 3 months to clear my head, and I don't have time to read 7 self-help books. So stressful things happen all the time, of course, and during the holidays is no exception. For one thing, there's more to do during the holidays. And if you're like most people, you haven't stopped doing any of the things you were already doing. And another is that in the holidays, there's sort of this expectation that you should be happy. And if you're not, that could be more stress. But here's one key to making a shift. The cause of stress is not your to-do list or the people in your life or even those things that keep happening that disrupt the plans that you have. The real cause of stress is the way we respond to the events in our life. And here's another key. The truth is that 9 times out of 10, a small shift is all it takes to get the peace and calm that you've been looking for. So I will tell you what happened to a client of mine, Kelly, when she put the principles of stress-free living into practice. So Kelly had a hard time with the holidays. She would have liked to spend them home with her husband and her kids. But instead, she went to Austria every year to spend them with her in-laws. So she did the planning and the scheduling and the packing. But that wasn't the hard part. The hard part was when she got there, she had a really difficult time with her husband's parents. She said, I don't think they like me. They make comments about my parenting that are really hurtful. And my husband says, oh, they're just like that. Just ignore them. But it's hard to do, and it's really wearing me down. And everybody's holiday stress is different, right? For her, it was the travel, the difficulty getting time for herself because she was gone for all of it, and the tricky extended family situation. So let's fast forward to today. Kelly is still taking her annual trip to Austria, but now she's smiling and she has a sparkle in her eye. Her husband has agreed to run interference with his family, something that she had been trying to get him to do for many years. Now he's doing it. And she says, it's easier to stay calm. I'm actually looking forward to this holiday. I don't even think those comments are going to bother me because I know how to take care of myself. So how did she get to the place where she felt like she could take care of herself? If you ask Kelly, she'd say that it was the stress-free living blueprint that I'm going to talk about today. So it helped her imagine how she wanted her holidays to be, how she would get from here to there, and some really simple, specific action step that she could take every day to make it happen. So what happened to Kelly can happen to you. You can live. You can learn to respond to the ups and downs of the holidays and of life in an authentic, meaningful, stress-free way. So in the next 30 minutes or so, 20 minutes or so, we're going to learn a couple of the most important parts of the stress-free living blueprint. So first, I'm going to talk about the biggest thing that keeps your to-do list growing, and you'll learn a simple tool to make better use of your time, money, and energy. And then we'll talk about some underlying beliefs that are probably getting in your way and how you can begin to shift them, because you can shift beliefs. And then we'll talk about if you're inspired to learn more and you want to integrate these tools into your life, I'll show you how to access two free resources at the end to help you get started. So even on your busiest days, you'll be able to find the precious moments to connect with family and friends and give yourself downtime so you can replenish as well. So first, let's talk about the biggest thing that keeps your to-do list growing and a simple way to help you make better use of your time, money, and energy. So do you ever have a day when you do you do 12 things, but you only check off two from your to-do list, and maybe you add three more? Raise your hand if you've ever had a day like that, where you feel like the list of things you need to take care of is longer at the end of the day than it is when you started, or where you go from one thing to another without stopping in between them, and so before you realize it, you've done another 10 hours at whatever it is you're doing? Raise your hand if you've experienced anything like this. Yeah, most of us have, and I definitely have used to do that a lot. I call this the Wonder Woman problem. We can call it the superhero problem, too, because if you'd like to go through your day, though, then you'll really want to understand and address this. So I call it the Wonder Woman problem because it's about taking on too much. It's based on a belief that we can do anything. And in the long run, in a certain way, maybe we can. But in the short run, there are only so many hours in a day. So it might sound obvious on the surface. We know that we can only do so much in a day, but somehow we act as if it's not true. We act as if we can do it all. So think about this. Is it easy for you to say yes when your family needs you, when someone in your office needs help, when a neighbor needs a favor, when a friend needs to talk? Right? When it's someone you care about, you just assume you'll find a way to squeeze it in, right? I mean, and this is wonderful. It's how we connect with people. At the same time, when there's too much on your plate, you can end up feeling like you're running in place. So I've been a working parent for most of the last 18 years. My kids just turned 18. I've been self-employed. I've worked as an employee. I've worked as a manager. And I get it. If you want to do well and you don't want to let people down. But at the end of the day, you realize you've hardly made a dent in the things you need to get done. And what you've promised is impossible. So the most common symptoms of the Wonder Woman problem are spending too much time doing things. When someone says, take a day off, your first thought is, I don't have time. Or you neglect taking care of one of the following: relationship, exercise, sleep, health. So, and it's easy to believe you could or should do anything, but the thing is, we don't have a magic bracelet or a lasso of truth or an invisible airplane. We can't even leap over buildings in a single bound. You know, we have kids and partners and jobs and things that we need to do, but it's a pattern that's hard to stop, and it's driven by a feeling of scarcity. It's about a difficulty trusting in life, that if you take a break, that things will start piling up more or even maybe fall apart. So it's like you're in a never-ending sprint, and sprints are fine when you don't have far to go, but no one can sprint for 20 years or even 2 years. You have to pace yourself. So here's a key behavior that keeps it going: saying yes too much. Because you're a woman, Wonder Woman, right? You can do anything. So you know the saying, like, if you want something done, ask a busy person. And like these efficiency experts say, like, well, when you're on hold on the phone, that's when you should make your grocery list. This is crazy. So this makes downtime impossible, and it just perpetuates the Wonder Woman problem. So saying yes too much is the biggest thing that keeps your to-do list growing. And the antidote is to take what I call an intentional pause. When you take time to pause and reflect, you not only feel more joy, but you actually get more done. And it's because the pressure that you create when you're constantly in motion, it's distracting. And when you jump from one thing to another, trying to handle all the last-minute things that inevitably come up, they always do, right? We're surprised, but they're always there, and they take an incredible amount of energy. You ever played a team? Anybody here played a team sport or even watched a team sport? Okay. So tell me which athlete you think would do better. A, the athlete that plays through game after game, stopping to sleep, but that's about it, every day, works lengthy hours practicing. Or B, the athlete that limits her practice to maybe 4 or 5 hours in a day and spends the rest of her waking time watching replays of her game, thinking about her form, making strategies for the next game. If you chose B, you're right. That athlete does better. And in fact, world-class athletes spend 4 to 5 hours a day on intensive practice. If you want to be the best you can be in your own family, in your own work, in your own community, you need to do the same thing. You need to intentionally pause. So I'll tell you, I have a work example. I had a client, Christine, who is a copywriter. You can apply these principles to any part of your life. This just happens to be work. So she said when we first met, I need to dump my business and get it going. This is the wrong line of work for me. So my clients don't pay on time. They don't pay enough. They change their minds in the middle. And honestly, the projects I'm working on are boring. So can you imagine how exhausted Christine was by the end of her day? So she started to use an intentional pause before taking on something new. So when a client asked her for something, she would wait. And she would make some time between the request and her response. And these are the words she used. Well, these are the words she used, and you can use them too. Let me think about it. With this tool, Christine created some space, and she started to say no. So she said no to projects that couldn't support her financially. She said no to clients who weren't really even sure what they wanted. She said no to work she didn't really care about. So can you imagine the relief she felt in her work when she was able to do that? And a few months later, she said, now I remember why I like writing. She found the energy to seek out projects that were really exciting to her. So the intentional pause can do the same for you. It can open up a creative space where you can make a choice instead of going on automatic pilot. So let's look at how you might look at it. One way is before taking on something. But let's say you want to make a decision. Maybe someone's asked you for a favor and you haven't decided yet. Or maybe you see an opportunity coming up. Or maybe there's something you'd rather avoid, but you think you should do it. So just get something in mind that you need to decide. It could be an invitation for later this week. So step one is to just take 3 relaxing breaths. So go ahead and do that. That gives you about 20 seconds just to be with your breathing. It takes you out of the past, out of the future, and puts you in the present moment. Step two is to reflect, to just hold open the possibility of saying yes and of saying no. Because in reality, every yes is a no. Yes to working an extra hour might be no to a healthy home-cooked dinner. Yes to hosting Thanksgiving might be no to a day's hike at Point Reyes. There's no right answer, but this gives you time to make a choice. And then step three is to make your choice. So this is one of the most important stress-free living tools. It helps you over time build kind of a mental muscle, so to speak. And when you learn how to create these pauses throughout your day, you'll be able to get off autopilot and consciously decide how to spend your time. This one shift will give you more time to spend with people you care about. It'll help you focus on using your money more effectively, and it'll give you more energy. So now you have a tool that will help you do that, to get off automatic pilot. Now I'd like to talk about the biggest thing that gets in the way of having a stress-free holiday and a stress-free life. So if you want to feel more confident, more resilient to life's challenges, if you want to have more fun, then this one is for you. So first, let's look at the biggest thing that undermines confidence, wears away resiliency, and takes the fun out of everyday experience. It's what I call the bully in your head syndrome. The bully in your head syndrome has to do with how we talk to ourselves, the inner dialogue. The driving force behind it is perfectionism. Whatever it is you have to do, you can never do it well enough. Have you ever noticed a voice like that in your head? So even if you have a clear goal, the bully in your head syndrome can keep you from making progress. Maybe you tell yourself that you have to do it all. It has to be done right. And you're the only person that can make it happen. I don't know if this shifted, but imagine someone were following you around saying things like, "Well, that wasn't very good." "Oh, you blew it again." "Not impressive." Can you imagine how depressing it would be to have someone following you around like that all day? But have you ever had thoughts that do that? That kind of thing is really common, and it holds us back. Once when my kids were little, I had this moment that we were driving to the park, and I finished everything on my short list, and I had dinner in the crock pot, and I got halfway there, and I realized that I had forgotten their dentist appointment. So all this bad mom dialogue starts going on in my head. I don't know if anyone else has all this bad mom dialogue. And I said with a lot of energy, "I can't believe I missed it." Well, my daughter tried to help out. She was 6, probably. Yeah. Do you want me to use this one? Is it working? That's what I thought.
Hello? No, it's not working. Okay, sorry.
Okay. So my daughter was 6, and she said, "It's okay, Mommy." Really sweet. But in that moment, I couldn't hear her. "No, it's not," I said with a lot of energy. And then I caught myself, and I started thinking, this is nuts, right? What am I teaching my kids about what's really important? So I had to have this conversation with them about sometimes it's easy to get upset with things that seem big, but they're actually really little. And I thought later how it's good to want to do your best. And at the same time, we're human. We're going to make mistakes. And why not celebrate all the things that went right instead of the one thing that went wrong? And the perfectionism spills over into relationships, too. You pick up on other people's flaws, or you don't realize when they're really struggling. So the symptoms of the bully in your head syndrome are, when you focus on what didn't get done instead of what did get done. 2 is you have an internal running list of what's wrong and you barely notice what's right. And 3, when you look back over your day, it's hard to remember the gems, the insights, the positive moments. My client, Anna, I was working with a woman who was under some pressure to get reports done, and we'd been working on how she tended to overbook and then ran out of time at the end of projects. The Wonder Woman problem, right? So she was much better at mapping out her time and getting things done. So a few weeks later, I asked her how these projects went, and she said, "I could have done better. In fact, it was a disaster." Well, that's a pretty strong word, disaster. So, of course, I asked her about it. She said, "I was really sick for about a week, so I barely finished on time. In fact, I wouldn't be finished at all if I hadn't done a lot of extra planning. At least I'm better than I used to be at estimating how long things take, and I had to be incredibly organized. But the pressure was so intense, I had to call a colleague of mine for feedback, and she helped me get some really good insights, so I passed those on to the person who hired me, and he was really happy with my work." Are you waiting to hear the disaster?
Yeah.
I heard she finished on time. She'd done extra planning. She was better at estimating time. She was incredibly organized. She caught a colleague when she needed help. And the person who got the reports was very happy. So I said, "I'm not seeing the disaster." You see, she wasn't focusing on any of those positive things. Her focus was on the tight squeeze at the end, and never mind that it was because she was sick. That's what the bully does. It dumps an endless stream of negatives, and it hooks us because there's usually a grain of truth in the litany. The truth in this case was, I could have done better. Of course she could. We all could. It's a truism. So what? I came across a Native American story that speaks about this. It goes like this. One evening, an elderly Cherokee brave told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside us all. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves. One is anger, regret, greed, guilt, resentment. And the other is peace, serenity, joy, compassion." The grandson thought for a minute and he said, "Which wolf wins?" And the old Cherokee replied, "The one that you feed." So here's a tool that helps you choose which wolf you're going to feed. It's a way to calm the busy brain. And when the busy brain generates these thoughts, there's a moment when we believe them. So this strategy is learning how to shift those beliefs. So can you imagine being able to shift your beliefs, the kind of energy that would free up for you? All right, so have you ever gone into a grocery store and seen those tabloid headlines? "Dick Cheney is a robot. Vampires attack U.S. troops. Man's head explodes in barber's chair." Raise your hand if you've seen a headline like this. People didn't. Everyone's seen one, right? Okay, now raise your hand if you believe those headlines, if you think, "Oh, I better start stocking up on garlic. Vampires are going to attack." Okay, so no more hands up. You don't do that, right? Then why do you do it with your thoughts? Before you believe one of these self-undermining thoughts, how about checking it for accuracy? So I'll show you how to do it, and then I'll run through a few examples so you get a feeling of it. And so I call this the EPIC strategy because it has an E-P-I-C for EPIC. So the first is just to evaluate the feeling. When you feel bad, there's a good chance there's one of those thoughts lurking around in the background. And for some people, they're really obvious. For other people, they're pretty hidden, but it's probably there. Two is to just perceive the thought. It's the negative thing you're telling yourself. It might be about yourself, like, "I'm not very good at this." Or it might be about somebody else, like, "She's not really trying." Three is to identify the true part. There is a grain of truth usually in these thoughts. That's what makes them so easy to believe. And then challenge the false part. That's the rest of the thought. So my first example is you and your partner have an important decision to make and you don't see eye to eye. So that's hard enough when you disagree. But then you layer it on with this thought, "He doesn't care how I feel." So evaluate the feeling. What, frustrated, sad, disappointment, something like that. The thought, I gave you that one, "He doesn't care how I feel." the true part. What's true about this is we don't agree, and it's hard, and I don't know what to do about it. That's the true part. And then challenge the false part. But that doesn't mean he doesn't care. So let's say you make a mistake at work. It happens, right? We're human. But then maybe you layer it on with a thought like, oh, I'm such an idiot. I'm never going to be good at this. So the feeling is maybe sad or maybe scared for your job. The thought, the name-calling piece, I'm such an idiot, and the future-predicting piece, I'm never going to be good at that. The true part is, yeah, I let that ball drop. And then the challenge is the rest of it. But I'm learning. I'm going to make sure this doesn't happen again. So I'll give you one more. Maybe you get mad about the mess in the kitchen and you yell at your kid and then feel bad about losing your temper. So feeling is maybe what? Guilt? The thought, I'm a horrible parent. The true part, I need to work on my temper. I yelled and I didn't want to do that. The false part, that we're challenging, but that doesn't mean I'm a bad parent. Next time I'm going to calm down before I talk to him about the mess. The thing about thoughts is that in a way it doesn't matter whether they're true or false. What matters is whether they're useful. So think about it, the story, I'm a horrible parent. That really limits what you can do. But when you tell yourself another kind of story, you can do something about it. I need to work on my temper. I yelled and I didn't want to do that. You suddenly have a lot more freedom to make a shift. And imagine how much more confident, resilient, and joyful shifting those thoughts would allow you to feel. So now what I'd like to do is we have about 10 minutes for questions. Let me think. About 9 minutes for questions. And then I have a couple more things to say, and I'll wrap up after that.
Is going to work for...
No. We'll just go back and forth. Maybe I can just walk around and hand this to people.
Oh, or I can hand it.
Well, if I have to respond, then
yeah,
I'll need it too. So we'll spend... can you tell me when it's about 8 minutes before we have to stop?
Yeah.
So like 18 minutes till? Thank you. Questions? I got it. Thank you.
I think you've established... an adversarial relationship with your inner voice, and that if instead of saying that it's a bully, say, okay, how should I do it? And I've discovered that when you have a friendly relationship with the inner voice can find lost objects. The inner voice can have insights into your relationships that you never thought of, and the inner voice can dictate a whole book.
Yes, I agree. I have much respect for the inner voice. I was addressing negative thoughts in particular, that particular angle, but I agree that compassion for yourself and your own fears and your worries is extremely helpful, and that's another very wonderful way to approach it. Other questions? Did you have
one? Yeah, I find that what makes me say yes a lot of times is guilt, that I feel like other people are doing so much, you know, like especially here in the church, other people are doing a lot, so I should have to say yes to everything. How do you get around that?
Well, you could look at guilt as one part of that inner voice, and you could have compassion for it, or you could challenge it, but it's pausing to evaluate the situation, right? There's no right answer. Should I take on this job at the church? There are probably many reasons to do it. There may or may not, depending on your situation, be reasons not to do it. And to actually pause and weigh that so that your life is intentional is really the key. And that's what's hard to do. It's usually it's such a reflex to say yes to things that we don't give ourselves that pause and that way of thinking through it. I mean, again, I will say every yes is also a no. So what are you saying no to when you say yes to that? And it may be perfect, the best thing for you to do, and it may not at that time. And we don't want anybody to be running around taking on everything possible and feeling stressed out inside either. So I wouldn't want to do something just to catch up with other people. I would want to encourage other people to pause and think through a strategy that maybe wouldn't feel so fragmented as well.
This is a great topic for me. I really go through a lot of stress and depression around the holidays. I'm sure I'm the only one who does that. But it is like Charlie Brown and Lucy, and I'm going to do it differently, and I'm going to handle this differently. And it seems that the same damn thing seems to happen. And what I am aware of is that it's not that my husband is a Scrooge, but I am the one who wants to fill the house with a lot of people around the holidays. And so I think what's in my mind is that we're going to negotiate this one, because it's really important for me to have people to celebrate this holiday with. So if you have any other suggestions, I'm open. Thank you.
Suggestions for how to negotiate that? No, I think that it might not. That's true. Everything we try does not work. There's no guarantee. But I think what you just said now was that something is really important to you, and it was an important part of holiday celebration, and so you want to find a way to bring more of that into your life. And that sounds wonderful. And doing more of what you really value will help with holiday stress, because then you're not doing something else. And perhaps there's something else you're doing that you could do less of.
What do you think leads to a lot of self-negativity and criticism? Is it our parents, or is it failure, or what is it that develops a personality that's constantly criticizing itself?
There are many therapy theories, and since I was trained as a psychotherapist, I've learned many of them. And where I am right now with it, yes, certainly it can come from past events of all kinds. They could be from family events, but they could be from other events in your life too. People go through many, many difficult things. And, many people are just in very difficult circumstances for long periods of time, and it's hard to keep that attitude. I'm just proposing, though, that it is possible to begin to shift that. It's not easy, doesn't happen in an instant, but it's possible to begin to recognize and shift those thoughts so that they don't have a life of their own inside your head. If you can do it even occasionally, then you're going to be better off.
Could you just repeat again the four things for EPIC?
Yeah. So E is for evaluate the feeling. So that's just notice that you have a feeling. P is for perceive the thought. So that's the tricky one for most people, is catching that thought. And then you scrutinize it. So there's the true part and the false part. So the true part is to look for it. And you'll notice in my examples, that wasn't part of the thought that as I put it out there. Like, oh, I really blew that. That's not where the true part was. Well, that is the true part, actually. I said, I'm such an idiot. That wasn't there's no true part in what I just said. The true part is, I dropped that ball. And then the false part is the rest of it. So it's identify the true part and challenge the false part.
Thank you so much. I heard something that really resonates with me, and two things, actually. The first thing is that I never trust my first thought, because it's always rooted in fear. Always wait for that first thought to pass, and then the second one is the rational. I wake up in the morning with an ant problem, and and the ant actually is automatic negative thinking. And, and so I just want to know, I guess my question is how do you, what's a good way to exterminate the ants?
We're
Well, okay, so you just talked about exterminate, so we're tapping into the bully, you know, imagery. But you said something else, too. So I used that imagery, the bully, and said to challenge them. You suggested befriending them. You said, I wait until another thought comes. Just give it some space. So that's a third approach, really, and all three of those can help you with those problems. So you can have patience and recognize, oh, that's just my first thought of the day. I'm just going to let that go by, as you do. You can see if you can have compassion for that thought or for where those thoughts are coming from and befriend it, as this gentleman suggested. And you can challenge it and saying, what's the true part of this? What's the false part? So it probably is. So there are three things for you to try. And you're already working on one. Pick one for the week or the day and see if you can make any headway with a couple of thoughts. We're looking for small shifts. We're not looking for suddenly the thoughts aren't there anymore, because that doesn't happen for people. But small shifts, and they'll become less over time. I think I would guess that your habit of that you developed for waiting for the next thought to come, for letting the first one pass by, has probably already reduced the frequency of those thoughts. So great strategy. Do I see another hand?
Do you find that sometimes one way to deal with a bully is to exaggerate it? If it's rooted in guilt, for example, say, yeah, I should be tarred and feathers. Why aren't I in jail? Why aren't people taking stones out when I walk by?
I'm always for introducing humor. That always helps.
I like how you boiled it down to EPIC, E-P-I-C. What's tough for me is the evaluation, because a lot of times if you don't name it, you can't do anything about it. It's the perception or even knowing that it's something that I should evaluate that I have a tough time with. You have any advice for that?
That's really about checking in with your mood. And there are probably certain situations. For some people, it's relationships. For some people, it's work. For some people, you know, it's a certain family member that they're, you know, they come away and think, that was really awful, consistently. So that would be the place to start checking in, or else just that feeling of frenzy all the time. There are some ways you can do it. You can do something like, we don't wear watches, but there used to be, maybe your phone, that beep every hour. Mostly you don't want that, but if you want to check in with yourself, it's actually really helpful. So every hour you could say, okay, how am I feeling now? So just kind of, build a practice of noticing what's going on behind the scenes with a particular idea in mind, like I'm going to notice what kind of thoughts I'm having when I feel that way, or notice what kind of feelings I'm having throughout the day. Okay, I'm going to pass something out. Okay, before we move on, let's recap what you've learned so far. And I'll talk about this sheet. So you've discovered a powerful tool that will keep your to-do list from constantly growing, and that's to take an intentional pause. If there are extras of these, you're welcome to also just leave them on the seat near you, and I'll pick them up at the end. You have several ideas about how to shift some of the underlying beliefs that sap your time and energy. As you can imagine, these tools are the tip of the iceberg. There are more strategies and tools that can help make stress-free holidays and stress-free living a reality. Maybe you have some big challenges you're dealing with and you aren't sure how to find the clarity you want. Or maybe you'd like some help with changing self-critical thoughts. So if you'd like to have the results Kelly did, where she was not only looking forward to the holidays, but feeling more in charge of every part of her life,
then you'll want to dig into a little more of the stress-free living program. So I'd like to offer those two free resources I promised at the beginning. And the first resource is for everyone. And if people that listen to this later would like them, they can just send me an email and get them as well. So the first is a copy of an article I wrote, and you'll see this on your form. I know that feedback is a little tricky. You're welcome to write feedback. I know that you might not want to in this. We don't have desks. But the two check boxes at the bottom, I'm going to talk about those. So an article I wrote called Three Simple Shifts for a Stress-Free Holiday, A Busy Person's Guide, as well as monthly articles with ideas and tips for working, loving, and parenting gracefully in the modern world. And I'm going to include with that also, because there were a couple of questions, I'll put the EPIC strategy. I'll just make a handout for that and send that to you too. So if that sounds like something that you would like, then put your email down and please make it legible. And I will send those things to you in the next couple of days. The second resource isn't for everybody. It's a complimentary stress-free holidays strategy session. It's for you if today's talk really spoke to you and you're really serious about wanting a stress-free holiday. As an acknowledgement for the time you invested to be here today, I've cleared 14 spots on my calendar for these. So there should be enough for everybody who's interested. If you're like Kelly and you're trying to balance everyone's needs and keep your cool in the presence of tricky people and take care of yourself too, then this call might be for you. So it's a phone call. And here's what we'll talk about. I wrote it on that page so you can look. We'll talk about your ideal holiday where you have plenty of energy, you're on top of things and enjoying every moment. We'll take a look at what's stopping you from creating that kind of holiday. And it might be obvious, but often it's a real surprise. And you'll leave the call with at least one practical strategy to help you meet the craziest days with gusto and enjoy what matters to you most. So the way to get one of these sessions is to check that box, the second box, make sure your phone number's there. And then when we're finished, if you go back to that table in the back, you'll see a number of clipboards back there, and you can just sign up for one of those times. They're all during work hours, and they're Mondays or Fridays, so I'll just put out that too. And they'll all happen over the next few weeks. But I would like to ask you a favor. If you do sign up, please make every effort to show up for the session, which means be by your phone. If you sign up for a spot and don't take it, then it takes that time from someone else who really wants it, and I have a really busy practice. So I know that emergencies happen, but if you do sign up, I'd love it if you show up. So having too much on your plate is a very modern, very human dilemma. But it's a dilemma that can be resolved, and it doesn't depend on luck or willpower. It's possible to be busy and productive, and be there for your family, and still live a joyful, spacious life. I'd like to close by asking you a couple of questions, so just take a moment and make a mental note of your answers. Number one, do you typically take on projects and problems as if you were Wonder Woman? Or do you intentionally pause before you decide something, so that you have time for the most important things in your life? And number two, do you typically believe your thoughts without questioning them? Or do you take an epic view of them by challenging the parts that simply aren't true? The way you answer these questions determines whether your days feel like a struggle up a difficult mountain path with the tree branches and the rocks, or whether your path through life will feel more like the serene, well-packed trail just a few steps away. Which path do you want to take? If you're like most people, you want to spend your time on the joyful path. To do so, here's a question I encourage you to ask yourself each and every day. What action am I willing to take today to make sure I stay on that joyful path each and every day from now on? Thank you and happy holidays.